This is the Geek Improvement Podcast. Tune in. Geek out.
Welcome to the Geek Improvement Podcast, the official podcast of geekimprovement.com, helping you keep track of and find the things you geek out about. I'm Alexi Santos, and with me just as last week is Zach Erickson. How's it going, Zach?
Good. I'm getting my chair dance going on over here to our music. Dude, I love it. Rob Goobers, or what is
Goobers?
His name?
Rob Goobers at Schnauzer Studios, I believe.
There you go. I just know Scott Johnson calls him Rob Goobers, so that's... Goobers. That's what I've always known him as, but dude, rocking the music and good to be here. I'm excited to have another show and some good feedback since last week, since our first episode.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, guys, for listening, and we hope you keep on doing so.
So, and hey, you know what? Spread the word.
Oh, of course. If you need our URL, it's podcast.geekimprovement.com. Jumping headfirst in here with Geek Homework. Last time, we talked about the X-Files, how it is a staple of geek TV, at least it was during the 90s. And although I missed it, because at that time I wasn't a huge TV watcher.
You were a wee lad.
I was. I was, however, able to recoup that lost time on Netflix and lose some more time in this decade. I love the show, and although I didn't get to watch any of the X-Files this week, I did partake in some X-Files geekery. At MegaCon, the convention I went to this past Saturday, they had a booth with a whole bunch of different IDs, and last year I remember going and looking desperately for an FBI badge that had Mulder's name on it. And to my disappointment, they only had Scully ones because they had sold out of Mulder ones. But this year, I bought one for $5 and I clipped it on to my t-shirt and kept on walking throughout the throughout the convention center. And another thing, on Amazon, you know the poster Mulder has in his office, the I Want to Believe with the UFO in the background?
Yeah.
You can find it on Amazon for like $2.
No way.
And it's the official fan club poster. So if you have Amazon Prime, I mean, you can buy that up and have it in your home for like $3. Unless, of course, the shipper doesn't provide Prime. But, I mean, it's a good deal either way. It's fantastic. I've got it at home. I just need to frame it up and hang it on my wall.
That's awesome. I totally should get that. At the very least, because I'm a cheapo and I don't have to pay the shipping to Canada, I might just, like, print it.
Print it out, yeah.
Yeah, but still, that's awesome.
Yeah, but this is a full-size poster. It's like, let's see, 2 feet by three, or two feet by 4 feet or so. You know, one of those nicely sized posters.
Right on. Yeah, I've got a – it's funny, actually, right behind my computer setup here, it just happens that the entire wall behind that is barn board. So I can, like,
yes.
I just tack all sorts of stuff up there. It's awesome. But, yeah, I actually did get to watch a few episodes. I finished season one, and I'm on to season two. And, dude, it's great.
Yeah. You know? Yeah?
No, it just is great. I mean, I'm sure the statute of limitations is far spent, so I can maybe talk about some spoilers. Maybe not. But at the end of season one, they basically say, oh, we're shutting down the X-Files. And I was like, wait, what?
Oh,
it's the end of season one. And then, you know, amazingly, they keep it, you know, that actually makes it even more interesting as season two progresses. So
there are so many twists and turns waiting for you, my friend, in seasons 3, 4, 5, and 6.
No, it's really good. I'm enjoying it so far. I have a lot more to do.
And my favorite part about the X-Files, well, one of my favorite parts, is that the season finales and the season openers, oh, man, those, like, to-be-continued episodes, they're, like, that span two or three, oh, those are the absolute best things ever.
Yeah, season two, there was the one where he was kind of a crazy guy, and he abducts Scully or something like that, and then to be continued. And I was like, what? You know, so.
Yeah, and you have to watch. And, you know, I was watching this when I went to field school up at Michigan State this summer, and it was like 2 in the morning. It's like, son of a motherless goat.
That's what happened to me while I was doing that. I was like,
yeah, to be continued at 2 in the morning. It's like, to watch or not to watch.
I was really excited.
So, Zach, I mentioned last week I was going to head out to MegaCon in Orlando, which is essentially the geek convention in Orlando. They have mostly anime and comic book geeks, but there's some video game stuff sparkled in, and there's just lots of cool stuff to see, including cosplayers. And I had tried to describe how awesome it was, but, you know, you can't – I couldn't quite put it into words that je ne sais quoi that a convention has. So I took one of my – good friends with me. He's actually a Geek Improvement's fantasy geek expert in residence, Terry, and he's here with us to go over, you know, what we saw at MegaCon. So what did you think about MegaCon as your very first con experience, Terry?
Well, like you said, Alexis, it was my first one. I'd never been to one before, so I didn't really know quite what to expect. Yeah, you told me about it, like you said, and I expected it to go and to, for it to be cool and, you know, just something to see. But I didn't expect it to be like it was. It completely blew me away. And like you said, I don't know what it was about it or quite how to put my finger on it. But it was a combination of everything there. Just the vast amount of taking everything in at once. Like, I remember the first few minutes that we were actually in the con itself, my eyes... I was trying to take in everything at once, and my eyes literally hurt. I had to close them for a second, let them adjust.
He took off his glasses and had to, you know, touch his eyes.
Like the classic, like, rub your eyes and, like, blink 3 or 4 times. And...
It was seriously like that. Like, my eyes, I was trying to take in everything at once, and I just had to have a minute. The cosplay alone was worth it. Like, I thought I was going to go and just, you know, the thought and the amount of work that people put into some of these just normal people put in their costumes is amazing. Like, dudes who look just like Batman or the Joker or anything like that. Like, from we saw
there was even the Reddit dude, you know, the Reddit logo guy. There was Beaker.
That's cool.
Yeah, Beaker and Professor, I don't know what to call him, Melonhead or Melon, I don't know.
You yourself were fascinated with the Ghostbusters in their power packs.
The Ghostbusters, the Blues Brothers were there. And this guy even had a remote control, maybe 6-foot-long pirate ship, which he was controlling, and his daughter was sitting in it.
That is cool.
And there were these two guys dressed up as Star Trek red shirts. One of them had a sign that said...
protesting, yes.
Yeah, it said, "Red Shirts, Local 42, beam this, Kirk." And on the other sign, it says...
It's pronounced ensign, not expendable.
Yeah, and they had, like, bandages, and one of them had, like, this, like, metal pipe
sticking out of his chest.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
And there was also the 501st Legion. That was really something to see. When we were sitting at the table eating, getting ready to go in, we saw like an army of stormtroopers walking down the stairs with Darth Sidious, Darth Vader, and Darth Malak in front of them. A bunch of Sith officers, along with a dude in a giant Wookiee costume.
Yeah.
A friend of ours sitting at the table started playing the Imperial March, and it just added the sheer level of awesome to it.
Yeah, that's one of the moments where you don't get goosebumps, you get geek bumps, because, I mean, it's like, oh, exactly. So cool. And MegaCon, the size, it was really, really huge this year. Normally they have a giant room, and then they have an extra room on the side with some food. But now they have 3 huge rooms. One specifically for vendors. Another one with half vendors and half, like, a artist's alley, I believe they call it. And then another room.
Calgary Expo has something similar to that.
Yeah, and then the other one was just for people to mill around. Because there were so many people, they had to open up extra space just so they could stand. Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
There was a lot more to do and see than I ever expected. We were there for hours just going up and down everything, and it was just all awesome.
Yeah, we got there at 10, and it opened at 8, and it closed at 6 p.m. I think it opened at 6.
And we left at, like, 4:35.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't even go to any of the sessions because most of the sessions are anime focused, and to be honest, we're anime stuff is not our forte.
But, not our strong point.
Yeah, so Terry, I do know that you and our other friend David did buy something because.
Oh, this was. I have to tell this story. It was. I have to tell this story. We were walking down the aisles, kind of getting. It was crowded, kind of getting shoved in a direction, and we happened upon a stall that was. It was quite busy, tons of boxes just scattered everywhere, only two guys running it, and they were selling a wide variety of swords and various sword replicas and stuff. And David and I, our other friend, happened to be at the corner of this table where they happened to have a set of these swords on a special rack. And it said, floor special, $20. So David and I looked at these, and
these
we went
are some
through
really
them
cool swords.
Both these swords, like there were some others for significantly higher prices that just weren't. They didn't look as like honestly, I was surprised that they were more expensive than these. Like there was a gun blade, but it was flat.
Final Fantasy fame.
Oh,
yeah, it didn't look anything like an actual replica. It was completely. It was more like a giant paperweight than anything, but. The two swords, David looked at his, and I've known David almost as long as I've known Alexis, and I knew that's David's sword. Fanned the blade, very simple hilt, but the blade went straight down, but spiked out in ridges along the way. It was definitely a deadly looking sword. David picked that up and bought him that himself, and right next to his, there was a sword with a more intricate hilt.
Essentially a dragon wing.
The pommel has a red gem in it, a kind of intricately carved handle, and the cross guard fans out one side into a dragon's wing, and then a simple wide blade down to a quite sharp point, despite the fact that the blade is dulled. I spent 3 days thinking of a name for my sword because as fantasy is my favorite area and I have plenty of other replicas, plenty of other swords. I have like a replica of Glamdring and Herogram, which are Gandalf and Theoden swords respectively from the Lord of the Rings. But I don't have a sword that's mine. That's just Terry's. There may be other swords like it, but it's not a replica of anything. It's just Terry's. I spent 3 days thinking up a name for my sword. And it was important to me. It's not something frivolous like naming a pet or a child. You have to put a lot of thought into this. And yesterday I was torn between two choices, Kano, which is Elvish for commander, and Lore, which is Elvish for dream, but at the same time has, you know, the meaning sounds like lore in English, you know, between myth and legend and everything, which I am also a huge fan, particularly fantasy-based lore. So I just couldn't decide, and it was Alexis's idea to have me write the two names down, put them apart, spin the sword, and have it choose. My sword chose its name, and it is Lore.
Yeah, let's not sell this short.
It was
this
like
was
a spiritual experience.
Well, it was a spiritual experience inspired by the game Twister.
Or spin the bottle, if you will.
Or spin the bottle.
Just much more meaningful.
Well, that's awesome, man. I'm actually really excited to go to the Calgary Expo when it's coming up soon.
It was far more impressive than anything I would have expected. Like, you just really have to go and see it and experience it for yourself to get the full breadth of it.
Yeah, so if you haven't gone to a con before, please, 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 please go to a con. And in fact, if you're in the Tampa Bay area, this isn't exactly a con, but the Bay Area Renaissance Fair started on February 18th and goes until April 1st, I believe.
You said you were going to be going, Alexis?
Oh, I'm going to be going. I'm going to be going in 2 weeks. So if anybody is in the Tampa
That's
Bay
like
area.
A step up too. I don't even think they do stuff like that where I am.
You know what? We need to combine.
What's the Bay Area for?
What?
But you're going to the Bay Area. That's just a long ways from where you are. Is all.
Well, it's about 45 minutes. I can make the drive.
Oh, okay.
But, I mean.
If another Bay Area. Never
mind. Yeah, the Tampa Bay Area.
There's more than one Bay Area.
Yeah. But if there isn't a list of, like, all the Renaissance fairs going on, we should make one.
Oh, definitely.
So people can can find the closest thing to them. And I haven't gone to Renaissance Fair, but I think as a geek, it is my duty to go to one of these things.
That's exactly right.
Now, one thing that we saw at MegaCon was, and in fact, I've seen it for maybe 3 or 4 years in a row now, is Fantasy Puppet. Okay, I have a problem. I love puppets, but this thing is... It combines an urge I have that's probably created out of the Gauntlet game for the GameCube, Dark Legacy, where I would always play a jester. Well, no matter what you play, but when you go to like level 10 or something or level 20, you get some like
a familiar.
A familiar, yeah, and they follow you around. If you're a jester, it's a flying rat. And they fight for you as well, if I remember correctly. And
they do.
That was all really cool. Now, this at fantasypuppet.com, you can actually buy yourself a puppet that will be perched on your shoulder. And, like, it has a tube that comes out of it. And, like, you can move it around and move its head around or whatever and control it. And the cheapest ones are $35, but they go up to, like, $270.
Let me ask you something, Alexis.
Yeah?
Do these $270 ones shoot fire? Do they fight for you? Because if they did, I would buy one in a heartbeat.
Unfortunately, I do not think that they shoot fire. They should. But
that's a disappointment. You should recommend that.
I'm going to be honest. Look at these things here. They freak me out. They're creepy.
They look kind of scary. And to be honest, I don't know when I would actually use them. But I need one.
They're so creepy.
You can, like, ask for different fur and different eyes and different heads. They've got bats. They've
flame
got
flame throwing capabilities.
Flame throwing capabilities for an extra $1,000.
Worth every penny.
Yeah, it's not very conducive to an audio show, but it's definitely go over. What is it? Fantasypuppet.com.
Yeah, fantasypuppet.com. They
need to hire a web designer first of all.
Yes. First notice. The same thing.
But yeah, they're pretty cool.
Yeah, they have a quote on their website that says, "Our puppets are a treat to experience firsthand. They become a part of your life as few things can. A friend, confidant, protector, and a child all rolled into one magnificent creature."
Wow, I'm looking at this little creepy. And I think what's really doing it for me is the eyes.
The eyes, yeah, the green.
Creepy.
But I mean, imagine having something like that, or a griffin on your shoulder. Just
wait,
like
they have griffins?
I'm yeah. looking at the griffins right now, and they're just weird looking. Yeah. But yeah.
I don't know. I'm slightly crazy. But anyway.
Yeah, I still think fire flowing capability sales would go through the roof, but no one listens to Terry.
Oh, man. Well, you know what? You can send them an email.
I will. And I'll promptly be banned from the site.
There's nothing against buying your own and then modding it to your heart's content.
That's true. In fact, we're going to be talking about modding very soon, in fact. Anyway, well, thanks, Terry. I'm glad you could join us to talk about MegaCon and how you enjoyed it. And
I was glad to be here, Alexis.
We'll talk to you soon again, probably when the next Hobbit trailer comes out.
Oh, please, yes.
Because Terry has read The Hobbit.
On that note, I feel it necessary to say that on the last Hobbit trailer, I listened to the song on the trailer for 3 days straight.
And
if you haven't seen it, go watch it.
I can attest to this because on Skype calls with him even, he was listening to it.
Nice.
Anyway, take care, man.
Yep, you do.
See ya.
Dude, those puppets, though, man, creep me out. I'm not getting good puppets from
it. I need one. I don't know how often I'd use it, but I surely need one.
Anyway. Some of them actually kind of remind me of, and I probably should have said this, there's a couple of these things that, especially, what is it, like a bat or something?
Oh, the bat one is like $30 or $35.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of... on the Blizzard store for World of Warcraft, there is one of the in-game pets that you can buy is a Windrider cub, which is like a little lion-bat hybrid sort of thing.
Yeah.
And it comes with an in-game pet that you would, have in-game, just a vanity pet. And then they also mail you a like plushy of the same thing, and it kind of reminds me of that. Here, maybe just put it in the Skype chat here. Of course, everybody loves this for the listeners at home, but yeah, you can look it up on their store, the Windrider Cub.
Yeah, it'll be in the show notes.
Yeah, it'll be in the show notes. So it's kind of funny though. I don't know. They are cool looking. They're just not for me. But yeah, anyway, so moving on.
Moving
suppose.
On.
WebGeek.
There we go. Playfic.com, PlayFic.com. For those of you who, I think I saw this on Boing Boing. And basically what Playfic is it's a way to create and play through text adventures, or interactive fiction is another way of saying it.
Yeah,
you know, like we're talking like way old school, like you are presented it with a room, you know, click here.
Exactly. And it's when I originally clicked on it, I was like, huh, this is like an R.L. Stine thing where, you know, you choose your make your own adventure or whatever. And you go, do you decide to go left to this or right to that? And it's kind of like that. But you're right. You have to think even more old school to like the 1980s, how far away that is.
OK, so I'm going to. If you get the reference, I want you to tell me what the reference is. But I'm going to read you something here. This is totally off the cuff. The one here is called Thy Dungeon Man.
All right. Oh, no. This is a geek test. Oh, God.
Okay. Ye find yourself in yon dungeon. Ye see a scroll. Behind ye scroll is a flask. Obvious exits are north, south, and Dennis.
Dennis?
Okay, so what do we do?
Dennis. Always Dennis.
Dennis. Ye arrive at Dennis. He wears a sporty frock coat and a long jimber jam. He paces about nervously. Obvious exits are not Dennis.
A jimber jam? Isn't that something from Dr. Seuss?
I have no idea. What do we do?
What are my options?
Oh, obvious
Dennis,
exits
again, not Dennis.
So it's talk to Dennis?
Yeah.
You engage Dennis in a leisurely discussion. Ye learns that his jimber jam was purchased on sale at a discount market and that he enjoys pacing about nervously. You become bored and begin thinking about parapets. So, exit. Should we say not Dennis? That was the exit.
Sure, not Dennis.
Okay, and now we're back at the beginning again. Okay, if you don't know what that is, Thy Dungeon Man it's from like the old Strong Bad. Did you ever watch Strong Bad?
No, I didn't. I know I should, though.
Yeah, it was... that was like a text adventure that was featured in a couple episodes of that. But it's really, you know, like totally old school stuff. And you can make your own. That's the coolest part. And it kind of actually will teach you a little bit of programming because you kind of have to, you know, write.
Exactly. I felt the same way because you have to be somewhat specific about what you want to do. You can't just say, go that way and do this or whatever. You have to think about the keywords in the thing.
Yeah, like all the stuff that's in caps is going to be something that's a keyword. And obviously, you know, you'd have to say in this particular room, you're not allowed to leave until you find the key. And so you have to be able to write a script, a certain thing that you have to go from here to here to here before you're allowed to go to this place
and
leave the room, for example.
And the cool thing about Playfic is that not only can you play these games, but you can create them as well.
Exactly. Yeah, that's kind of what I was getting at. Is like you, and I mean, they actually have a tutorial.
That's in the form of a game.
Exactly, that's in the form of the game as well. And so it's really cool, totally free. Check it out, playfic.com, just F-I-C. So... yeah.
And if you're interested in some of the tech behind it, you can check out inform7.com and Google code Parchment, which is some sort of like tree kind of action tree thing where, you know, you can choose the text.
I don't think it's necessarily programming in the sense of like, you know, Java or C++.
Oh, no, of course not. But it tense, makes right? you... in that mindset, makes you be in the mindset.
Exactly, yeah. It's more of like you start out in a specific area and then you just, through a branching tree sort of format, then you get everything that you need that way. So, pretty cool. And it kind of, again, gets you in the mindset of something a little bit more in programming and stuff like that. So,
speaking of games,
Video Game Geek.
This week on the Twitters, I was alerted by Zach that Mojang, the folks who make the popular game Minecraft, had some sort of Humble Bundle deal going on.
Zach? Yeah, yeah? It was absolutely, it was a pretty cool idea. Basically, what they did was they partnered up with the people over at HumbleBundle.com. And if you don't know what they are, they're basically a website that every once in a while they'll have a bundle of cheap indie games or whatever, and a lot of times it's either a specific amount donation to get the games or whatever. Usually it's pay what you want. And what they were doing, what the people over at Mojang and eventually some other people, a couple other companies joined in as well, was they were going to make a game in 60 hours.
Man.
And so, which, yeah, they were going to, from start to finish, they were going to program this whole game. All of the art assets were done in 60 hours. All of the music, everything was done within a 60-hour time frame.
That is insane.
Yeah, and I think, I don't know for sure, but I believe the people, the Mojang team, I think they have about, what, like 7 people, maybe? So they pounded this out, and it was cool, too, because they had a, they had a poll on their website, and they had a game type and a game genre, or like more of like a setting. So, and they said basically they were going to combine the highest or the most popular and least popular game types and combine them to make a game. And then the most popular and least popular setting were also going to be, would be combined and put into the game. So, what they ended up with was a real-time strategy shoot 'em up that took place in steampunk Egypt.
Yes.
And I know you're a fan of the steampunk, Alexis.
Oh, and the Egypt as an archaeologist.
Oh, yeah, there you go. So it ended up, you know, it took them 60 hours, and they finally, and, you know, I think I paid a couple bucks because I'm cheap that way, and because I had ended up spending way more than I expected to on the game music bundle from last week. But I ended up getting the game, and there was actually another company that did the second most and least popular. And so that ended up being a dungeon crawler beat 'em up in post-apocalyptic World War II, whatever that means. So I don't know, maybe it was like the Nazis won and that's what the RPG is. I don't know. But so they ended up, the people over at Mojang ended up with a game called Catacomb Snatch, which is kind of, I'm surprised you didn't laugh, Alexis. You melded, and I was the one who couldn't do it.
I'm sorry. I can't help but laugh at Snatch.
Immature over here at geekimprovement.com. Anyways, so they ended up with this game. It's actually a pretty fun game. Kind of a 16-bit style.
Yeah.
From what you saw. And you know, it's a shoot, you know, an obvious shooter game where you try to get the resources and that are located in part of the map, and you have to,
you're dungeon crawling.
Traverse through the map to get to get
so
through this
many
stuff.
Jokes I could make, but I'm not gonna.
and then they released it to the people who had donated. And the coolest part ended up being what came later, and you know, I mean, it was a $60 marathon. You can imagine that by the end of it they got it released, and they actually released it probably within an hour of the final, between the time that it was closed, and they ended up releasing the source code, which nobody really, they had said that they were going to do it, but they ended up, you know, releasing the source code to the people who donated, saying, here you go. And they actually put up a blog post on their website kind of detailing that they intended this to be something, you know, to be used for educational purposes. You want to learn how to code, you want to learn how to, you know, maybe get into game design in Java, which is what this game is built in. Go ahead, download the source code. They give links to a couple of different free development things here, and you're on your way to you know, developing a game. And you know, if you want to tweak the game, if you want to go in and change all the sprites and stuff like that in the game,
and frankly,
you totally can do that.
I think that is the absolute best way to program. I was under the impression for the longest time, thanks to, I guess, just general talk among everyone in, like, high school and middle school and, you know, I guess pop culture, that you gotta be good at math to be able to program. You know, you gotta, that's, the two go together. Not true. That's the problem. If people are taught to program in a math focused way, when they don't like math, they're not going to learn how to program, or at least it's going to be very difficult. The way I've been able to learn how to program over the past just over a year now is essentially having a project that I want to work on and learning everything I need to learn in the programming language I'm using to be able to execute that project. And not only that, but just hacking, you know, hacking is the best way to learn. And I don't mean hacking in like, oh, you know, I'm going to hack some sort of network. Just, you know, get into other people's code that, you know, is freely available, just like the Catacomb Snatch source code, and just mess around. If I change this, what does, you know, what happens? And that is the absolute best way to learn how to program. And I cannot be more grateful for Mojang to, you know, They did an awesome job in being in releasing this. Well, they could have easily said, okay, yeah, we're going to put this up on Steam, charge $5 for it, and that's all.
Yeah, it's cool. And I mean, already, we'll have a link to it in the show notes as well. Already, there's somebody who, a company, I think it's called Ubersoft Tech or something. This guy has gone and, because when they released it, there were a couple of game-breaking bugs, basically. And if you bought the bundle, then sorry, that was what you knew you were getting at the end of it, was the result of our 60-hour marathon. We're not going to fix it, is basically what they said. So this guy over there has created Uber Catacomb Snatch, which has fixed all of the bugs. He's kind of tweaked a couple of things that, you know, added a couple gameplay features. Like, for example, in the original release, you could move your character around, but if you held down the button, or if you held down spacebar, that would shoot. But you would always shoot in the same direction as long as spacebar was held down. This guy said, well, wait a minute, why don't I just map the arrow keys to the shoot direction and move WASD to my character movement? And so then you've got two, it's almost like a dual stick shooter sort of deal, right? Huh. So he, you know, tweaked stuff like that and is already improved the game. And I mean, what a cool thing that they would just release it. And already it's out there, and it's something that, you know, several games could potentially sprout from.
Yeah.
And you know, somebody asked one of the guys from Mojang on Twitter, saying, so what's the licensing for this thing? They said, well, it was for charity, and the source code is for educational purposes. So I don't think that anybody can go out of their way. You know, there's no terms of service in the game, which is, I think, kind of a scary thing. I don't think they're ever going to enforce anything, you know. But I think, you know, it's cool that they've just basically come out and said, here you go, here's the source code.
Here it is, that's it. No pretenses, no nothing.
Exactly. And there's, you know, I think one of the other games that was released as well, they released the source code for their stuff too. Theirs wasn't written in Java. It was written in something else. I'm not entirely sure what it was, but
By the way, if anybody's interested in learning how to program, I would recommend learning Python. And, I mean, yeah, dig in with Java. I mean, the important thing, if you want to learn how to program, is just pick something and run with it. But if Java isn't your thing, try Python. I absolutely love it. They looking through the Java code and seeing a whole bunch of curly braces makes my eyes just unfocus.
Yeah, I'm taking a course. I'm a psychology/neuroscience major, and one of the most popular programs that is used for data analysis is called MATLAB. I don't know if you've heard of that, Alexis?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so it's basically, it's a sort of programming language in and of itself that's specific to that program. And you can buy a compiler for it if you want to make actual programs. Otherwise, it's pretty self-contained. But we have like a basic assignment that's due at the end of the semester where, just like you were saying, just getting in there and getting your hands dirty and getting started on it. That is the best way to learn. It was funny. I was working on something for like an hour and a half, and I was like, how in the heck do I do this? All I want to do is I have a spreadsheet, and I want it to find the thing that says this. How do I do that? You know, and it spent me 2 hours, and I had like 10 or 12 lines of code from been searching through the help stuff and everything. And then finally, it's funny when all of a sudden you're like, oh, it only takes one line of code and it's this, you know, done. Yeah. And I was just that took me 2 hours to figure out.
And when you learn things that way, you'll never forget them.
Exactly.
It's rather than asking a teacher and they go, oh, this. And then exactly. you got it done.
Movie Geek.
So, Zach, I've been hearing something about hungry people in some new movie. I'm not really sure what's going on. I assume there's some sort of book or something?
Okay. So, The Hunger Games, if people haven't heard of it, obviously you're one of them, Alexis. There's been a couple of TV spots that have come out recently, and I figured with it coming up, it's, what, a month away, I guess. March 23rd is when it's going to release. Mm-hmm. And it seems to be one of the bigger, more anticipated films leading up to the summer. Mm-hmm. And so basically now the whole idea of the story and the book series is that it takes place in a post-apocalyptic sort of future setting. It's an undefined future where the United States has gone through another huge civil war, I believe, and what they call the capital has become the dominant state, if you will, of the country, and everything else is divided into districts.
Okay.
And in order to keep the districts at bay and to keep them obedient, I guess, they hold what they call the Hunger Games, in which they take a boy and a girl between the ages of 12 and 18, I believe, and they take a boy and a girl from each district and force them into an arena to fight to the death. And, you know, like starting at 12 years old. So and they have a lottery in order to see if you get into the end up in the Hunger Games. And mm-hmm. So it's a 3-book series, and it follows the adventures of Katniss Everdeen, who is played by Jennifer Lawrence, who you may have seen in X-Men First Class. She was Mystique in that movie. Did you see X-Men?
Yeah. Well, not First Class, but I have seen many other X-Men.
Okay. Well, in the latest, in the X-Men First Class, she mm-hmm. played Mystique, and she was really good in that, actually. So I enjoyed her. So she is actually playing the main role. They've got a lot of other really cool actors in there. They've got Stanley Tucci is in there. Woody Harrelson.
Stanley Tucci. His name sounds so familiar, but I can't remember where he's from.
He's been in a lot of stuff. Most recently, you may have seen him in Captain America as the German doctor.
Okay.
The guy turns him into Captain America.
Oh yeah, that guy. Okay.
Yeah. So he's in there. We've got the guy who Liam Hemsworth, who is the little brother of Thor. He plays a character in there.
And out of all people, we have Lenny Kravitz.
Lenny Kravitz plays a pretty important role in there. Donald Sutherland plays the bad guy, like the big bad guy in the movie.
Speaking of Lenny Kravitz, can you hear that? Yeah. Okay, I gotta stop that. If not, we'll get pulled off iTunes or something.
Oh, wonderful. No, I mean, Lenny Kravitz is funny. It's actually funny. The character that he plays, I didn't imagine, now, not to be a racist, but, you know, I'm not racist. But when a white guy reads a story, everybody in the story is white unless distinctly defined otherwise. I guess. I don't know. Lenny Kravitz plays almost like a fashion designer sort of guy. But he's also like part of I don't want to give anything away, but he's a pretty cool character in the series.
You know, I have a problem with the way this has been. I guess, for the record, I don't watch cable TV. And that's not because I have some aversion to cable TV, even though I guess I kind of do in some ways. It's just that here at college, I'm in a dorm, no cable. So the only exposure I get to cable TV is when I go home for the weekends once in a while. Now, I have seen posters for The Hunger Games. I believe I saw one actually in the school cafeteria, and it showed like the logo of like some raven and an arrow, and I'm like, huh, this sounds like some medieval stuff. And before that, my impression of The Hunger Games is something like The Hurt Locker. I don't know, maybe because it starts with H. I'm like, what? Right. I was just so confused as to what in the world is this thing? And now I find out that it's some sort of sci-fi kind of futuristic, hey, look, it's a Mad Max and the Thunderdome reality TV show for some dystopian future.
Yeah, and it's funny because it's actually the books, the thing, and this will make you cringe, but don't worry too much. The closest thing that I can, as sort of the phenomenon that it is slowly becoming, the closest thing I can relate it to is Twilight.
Oh, no.
Because, because the actual books themselves are written as sort of the same sort of perspective that Twilight was. It's from the girl's point of view. There's a little bit more focus on the fashion sort of things or the feelings and whatever than your typical sci-fi would be.
Feelings?
But the entire setting around that is so
good.
Is so good that when they, you know, like sometimes you, like as I was, I listened to it from Audible, you know, the audiobooks, and I was, every once in a while I'd be like, okay, we don't need to know the details about the dress. Okay, we know that you're thinking about him while you're hiding up in a tree or whatever, right? But
no. How did you hear about The Hunger Games? You know, what got you interested in listening to it?
Well, actually, I think it was my aunt a while ago told my wife to read it, and my wife read the first two books and loved them, and I was like, okay, it's, you know, it's one of those kind of books or whatever, but she was like, no, it's like, you know, they're, and my wife isn't really the type that is super, she's not super nerdy, so.
So she liked it, nerdy, it must be good.
You know, yeah, I was like, okay, I'll give them a listen.
Now, is this a trilogy or a cycle?
Yeah, it's a trilogy. So the first book is called The Hunger Games. The second one is called Catching Fire. And the third one is called Mockingjay. And so, yeah, it kind of goes through, so you know, you can imagine this book. Sort of a setting, how, you know, where the capital is kind of domineering and being this tyrant over these districts, that you can imagine over time there'd be a little bit of dismay about or disgruntlement. And so
So The Hunger Games is just going to cover The Hunger Games, the first book then, right?
It's just the first book, I believe. Yeah.
Now, I need to bring up an old wound of the movie Aragon. Oh, man. If you have read the Aragon, if you have read the Aragon cycle, I guess now, or Inheritance cycle, I should say, has the book Aragon, Eldest, Inheritance, and Empire, I think. The fourth book came out November last year. Really good book, and then they screwed up the movie completely. Within the first 10 or 15 minutes, something that never happened in the book happened in the movie, and from then it was just downhill. So, people who like The Hunger Games, I really hope it works out for you, but
yeah, no, it's a little, it'll be interesting for sure, and this is kind of a side note, but the developer who made the game, Cannibalt. Did you ever play the game Cannibalt?
Oh, yeah, Atom Atomic.
Yeah. That developer is going to be releasing the official Hunger Games app on iOS. And so, and maybe I'll throw this link in here into there so you can see it. All they've shown so far really is the title screen, but it's, you know, it's going to be sort of that 8-bit sort of look. So it'll be interesting. It seems like it's going to be sort of in the vein of Cannibalt.
Mm-hmm.
So that'll be the way that the developer kind of describes it is Cannibalt meets archery sort of thing. So you're running and shooting. So that, okay. I think that'll be cool. But yeah, I'm looking forward to the movie. It is something that should, from the trailers, it looks like they're staying pretty, faithful to the exciting parts of the book. So
okay, well that's
hopefully staying away from some of the boring girly sides of it. Not that anything wrong with girls, just that it don't make good action cinema.
You generally think that.
Yeah, for the most part.
If I had a bumper for the Gadget Geek section, it would go right here. However, in lieu of that, we'll move on to talking about OS X Mountain Lion. Well, Apple just released OS X Lion last year, was it? And now they decided to release Mountain Lion with more iOS influence features. What really jumps out at you, Zach?
Well, first of all, this isn't something that we generally spend a ton of time talking about on this show because we mostly want to talk about the super geeky stuff, but this is sort of slow this week, right?
Yeah.
So we figured, okay, we'll give this a little bit more time than we normally would, but basically what we're looking at, it is a little bit weird that it's less than a year later that they're actually announcing this, which when I first saw on Twitter when it was announced, because I woke up and looked at Twitter as I was kind of having my morning cereal.
Oh, no, another $30 I have to spend.
Yeah, and people were like, oh, man, thanks, Apple. I haven't even upgraded to Lion yet. You know,
that's
a lot
me.
Of people are still waiting for some programs to be updated to Lion. So there's a little bit of backlash there, I think. But I think Apple's making it pretty clear that, you know, they may be moving forward with yearly releases of this.
Yeah.
So having said that, it's basically more just a... It's almost like they could release this as a series of apps minus a few features, you know, or updates to things like Safari. As far as things that jump out to me, I think that the Messages app, I downloaded the beta for it, and it's great. I actually was talking to you, and you probably didn't even notice the difference.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was just, you know, just talking just through text, you know, just it totally syncs with iMessage. As well as, you know, you can use your Yahoo, Google Chat, Jabber, that sort of thing. AIM, if you still use AIM, I guess. so that was really cool. That's really the big one. They're also adding a notification center, similar to what iOS 5 has, where a little panel will slide out to the side. And it'll show you all of your notifications.
Three things that jumped out at me about Mountain Lion so far. One is Gatekeeper. There had been a lot of talk when the App Store the desktop App Store came out that, oh no, eventually Apple is going to move into this kind of world where they will only allow apps installed through the App Store. And now they have this Gatekeeper thing, which strikes a compromise, really. While they still allow apps to be installed that weren't downloaded through the App Store, they now have Gatekeeper, which essentially provides a certificate for the app. So you can be, quote, certified, and, you know, you can, through Apple, and people who download and install apps can be sure that the apps you're downloading are safe. And, you know, you can choose not to use Gatekeeper for your app, and people can still install your software. It'll just say, warning, like, not verified with Gatekeeper or something.
Mm-hmm. Now, in order to get the certificate, do you have to pay?
I don't think so.
Do you have to have apps with a developer ID? Do you have to have a developer ID
for that?
Or do you have to only pay stuff into the App Store?
We're going to make you an offer you can't refuse. You're going to have to pay for protection money. Yeah, you have to have a developer ID.
And that is the $99 deal.
That is the $99 deal.
Okay.
Apple trying to nickel and dime you, but keep you safe. Maybe. They're exactly paying for protection. Anyway, also Game Center, which I think could be interesting because it might be a way to make games more prominent on the Mac. So we might start seeing more cross-platform games and or just more Mac games in general. And I mean, the App Store has already helped that a lot.
Yeah, the Game Center is interesting because I don't actually use it a lot on iOS, as far as I know. Like,
I think it
tracks achievements and stuff.
Uh-huh.
But if they implement it right, it could be a good. I almost want to call it a competitor to Steam, but not really.
Yeah,
at the same time,
like an Xbox Live kind of thing, but very, 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 very light version of Xbox Live, like Slim Fast Diet Xbox Live.
Yeah, exactly. So, Slim Fast. Wow, that was a reference I wasn't expecting. But yeah, it's pretty cool, you know, that it's working. The final one that really jumped out at me was AirPlay mirroring.
Oh yeah.
Which, we have an Apple TV at our house, and every once in a while I will use airplane mirroring to, you know, show something on the on my TV or whatever, and it's a really cool feature. And what really jumps out at me is that this is something, this almost looks like something that Apple is specifically targeting stuff like businesses. You know, right on the webpage, even they show, you know, the thing with Keynote. You know, can you imagine how many, okay, just plug this thing into your existing TVs, it's $100, you'll be able to, every single MacBook, iPad, or iPhone can mirror to this TV now.
Yeah.
That's huge.
No wires, no cables, no... Alexis, come downstairs. I need you to hook up X.
Exactly. Even the old fart in his office who's trying to do a presentation can figure out how to click the button and make it AirPlay.
Yeah.
Right. Not to say that, you know, people who are giving presentations are old, decrepit people, but it's it's cool enough. It's a cool enough feature. My only problem with it so far is that when, like, I like to play what I, at least what I've tried to do, is play something like Jetpack Joyride on my iPad,
mm-hmm.
and have it play on my TV. And it is, through AirPlay mirroring, it's always pretty choppy. Mm-hmm. It's never a smooth experience. And so I don't know if they have to, what they have to do in order to make the AirPlay mirroring a smoother experience, because it's pretty laggy right now. If you were to use it for presentations, that's fine, right? If you're doing a keynote presentation, that's great. But if you're doing anything more than that, it's
I've never heard anybody complain about a presentation going terribly because the lag.
Yeah. Oh man, the frame rate on that slide was pretty.
Yeah, it was so embarrassed. Yeah. The last thing that stood out to me was share sheets. I mean, okay, it's not a huge revolutionary thing. It's just the little symbol, you know, on your iPhone or your iPad that is essentially the share symbols. You know, tweet something out, email something. I just never knew it was called the share sheet or that it was supposed to look like a piece of paper. I just, it's that weird arrow-looking thing.
Exactly. I actually was listening to a podcast earlier this week basically talking about this and how, oh, man, we don't, what do we need that for? Because it's, you know, we can just copy and paste the link and whatever. And that's, it's just, it's, I think this is one of the instances where Apple is just saying, you know what, this is something that will streamline and make the experience better.
Yeah.
So, you know, and there's a few other little things, like they're changing before, like right now, I think the contacts app is called Address Book and there's iCal, and they're doing some streamlining where now it's the calendar, just like it's called on the iPad and the iPhone, and the Address Book is the same thing. And so I think it's pretty cool.
And hopefully it won't cost too much or anything
hopefully
at all.
It's free. I think this is something that should be close to free. I don't think they can get away with charging $30 for it.
Yeah.
If that's what Lion was, you know, what they charged for Lion, then I think it'll be like $10 or free.
Yeah. Hopefully. Fingers crossed.
Yes.
Anyway, for our geek homework this week, last week, just on Friday, The Secret World of Arrietty came out in theaters. It is a Studio Ghibli joint, you know, Hayao Miyazaki, known from My Neighbor Totoro, Kiki's Delivery Service, Howl's Moving Castle, Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke, Ponyo, and many, many other more movies. Are you familiar with Miyazaki, Zach?
I've seen a few of the things, like, I've heard of them. I was a little bit surprised at how well this movie is doing critically. This movie has a 93% rating on Rotten Tomatoes right now.
Wow.
Yeah, 94 fresh and 7 rotten. So pretty amazing.
I had seen Totoro when I was like maybe 5 or 6. Oh man, how I love that movie. And Kiki's Delivery Service, have you ever seen them?
I have never seen any of those movies.
Oh man. See, although I'm not a really big anime geek, mm-hmm. I think people who aren't anime geeks and anime geeks alike should watch at least one Miyazaki film, starting off with Totoro and possibly Kiki's Delivery Service. I mean, there's just so many to choose from. I've only seen those two, but I know that Howl's Moving Castle, Spirited Away, Princess Mononoke, Ponyo, and now The Secret World of Arrietty is a good time to start being a Miyazaki fan. So if you, like us, aren't all that big on anime, you will still love these Miyazaki films. There's just something about them. Like Totoro, it's just one of the weirdest concepts. It's about this forest, protector of the forest thing. It looks like some giant cat bear thing. I don't know how to explain it. And this girl moves to a new house. She finds him in the forest. They fly away together. They go see the mom in the hospital. I don't know. It's weird. But when I was little, I was fascinated by it. And I can still watch Totoro and love it to pieces. So this week, I'm going to go to the theaters and watch The Secret World of Arrietty. So hopefully we can improve our anime geek.
Right on, man. And you know what? Here's something interesting. I just was looking at the Wikipedia page.
Uh-huh.
It's called My Neighbor Totoro. Is that right?
Yep.
There is actually Totoro has a cameo background appearance in Toy Story.
Yes. He's the in the little girl's house where Woody gets taken.
Mm-hmm.
He's that like gray cat looking thing. So like when I was watching the movie, I nearly had a geek out. I'm like, oh, it's Totoro.
That's awesome. I had no idea. I thought it was just like some random dude that was in there.
No, in fact, even in MegaCon, they're selling the Totoro's stuffed animals. I'm like, oh man, this. I gotta buy.
I will watch this week, and yeah, report back.
Cool. So Totoro, Kiki's Delivery Service, Ponyo, you cannot go wrong. Anyway, thanks for joining me this week, Zach. If we'd like to, get in touch with you, where can we do so? On the Twitters?
Oh, you can get on Twitter. It's at Zach Erickson. That's ZACERICKSON. And that's also ZachErickson.com is my blog. And yeah. That's pretty much it.
Yeah, and for Geek Improvement, you can find us, obviously, at geekimprovement.com and sign up for the private beta. All you got to do is plug in your email address, and we'll send you an email when we're ready to go. You can find us on Twitter at geekimprovement.com. At Geek Improvement. And you can find myself on Twitter at Alexi Santos. So thanks for being here. Thanks for listening, and we'll catch you next week. See ya.
See ya. Bye. Perfect. All right. We'll fix that in post or something.
I was going to edit that out.
Oh, whatever. You know what? Keep it in. I don't even care. I think it makes us more endearing or something.
The sausage being made, folks.
Yeah. All right. So anyway.
Ruh-roh. Just dropping in at the end of the show here, guys, to let you know that you can see pictures from our MegaCon adventure at blog.geekimprovement.com.